Welcome to Wednesday's Richie Allen Radio Show. I've had to do it a little bit differently today because of things out of my control. I couldn't bring it to you live. The streaming company experiencing difficulties in California. Nothing to do with me. So I've recorded the program for you instead. There's more ways than one to skin a cat. Or something like that, anyway. It's Wednesday, the 27th of January, 2021. My name is Richie Allen, and welcome to your Richie Allen Radio Show.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Alrighty then, I'm going to be running down the biggest, well not the biggest, but I suppose the most important news stories of the day in my inimitable style. Lots to talk about. There always is, it sounds like a cliche, lots going on here in the UK and around the world. So I'll just get on with it then, and I'll have a chat with you. A chat to myself. And, I don't know, we'll just crack on. Improvise, adapt, and overcome. I was taught that many moons ago by many, many wonderful men and women that I worked with over the years. I don't know if you saw this today. It's kind of funny. It's kind of indicative of the times we live in. It's bizarre and weird. Chinese authorities struggling to contain rising coronavirus infections ahead of the Lunar New Year celebrations in Beijing. Well, in Beijing, they've introduced anal swabs as a new type of coronavirus test. Anal swabs that could detect the virus more accurately. You hear that, Tom?
No. Could you repeat it? Because I can't believe my fucking ears.
Well, anal swabs have been introduced in Beijing, Tom, to help detect the virus more accurately. Wow. Anything to say to the Chinese, Tom?
Let me ask you something. Are you out of your fucking mind?
Well, they must be. I think this is further evidence that there are teams of men and women sitting around thinking, what do you think we can get the sheep to believe next? You, drop trousers, now! Oh, God. Good God. I'm going to begin today with the figure 100,000 deaths. Okay, it's everywhere today. Because the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, delivering a coronavirus briefing in Downing Street yesterday, well, he looked very somber and looked very upset and very sad and very angst-ridden as he announced that 100,000 people have died. The bishops, the Archbishop of Canterbury and other religious leaders have asked us to remember, going forward, remember these people that have succumbed to the coronavirus. I'll talk more about that shortly. RichieAllen.co.uk is my website. I did write about this on the website today. Do, by the way, use the website. Use it and abuse it. Get on there, read the articles, but do get onto the social side of it and leave comments there and interact with others. And I will be interacting with you as I figure it out myself. Alrighty. Now, the government counts a coronavirus death if somebody dies within 28 days of testing positive. And I pointed out in my article today something very important from last summer. Last summer, Oxford University, it was a whistleblowing moment, as far as I'm concerned anyway. It said, Oxford University, that as many as one third of recorded coronavirus deaths were people who died of other things. Imagine it. One third in the time leading up to the summer of 2020. One third of those listed as dying with coronavirus, in fact, died of something completely different. And what that meant was, if you had a heart attack and died, God forbid, if you had a stroke, a brain hemorrhage, if you were murdered, if you were in a car accident, if you fell off a scaffolding while repairing somebody's roof, you were added to the coronavirus death toll. And the kicker is this didn't even mean within 28 days of getting a positive test. No. This was the entire time span. Do you understand that? So back in April, for example, you might have gotten a coronavirus test and it might have come back as positive. All right, you're not sick. You don't feel sick. There's nothing wrong with you. And you get on with your business and get on with your life. 3 months later, in May or June or July, in July, you might get hit by a bus and you were still listed as having died with coronavirus and then added to the statistics. Now, the important thing to remember here is the World Health Organization saw this skullduggery coming. They saw it coming because early in 2020, at the beginning of the scamdemic, because there is no pandemic, the WHO advised that even if coronavirus appeared on the death cert as a significant condition, the death should not be included in the statistics. Now, you know, because you and I have been pals for a long time, I would never tell you anything unless it was absolutely true. Unless it was stone cold. A stone cold fact. And that's what I'm doing now, telling you the truth. The truth. Right? Right. The World Health Organization was explicit. The death should not be included in the figures, even if coronavirus appeared on the death cert as a significant condition. The World Health Organization guidelines state such deaths are not due to COVID-19 and shouldn't be classified as such. Fact. And last September, Dr. Jason Okay from the Centre of Evidence-Based Medicine at Oxford University, well, he only went and told the Telegraph newspaper that many people had been dying with coronavirus but not from it. And he issued a warning at that time that the overcounting would get worse as more and more people contracted coronavirus or tested positive. And I said today in an article on richieallen.co.uk, how wonderfully prophetic of Dr. Jason Okay, because that is what happened. And 10 days ago, well, it's more like 2 weeks ago now, the World Health Organization came out again and said that when an asymptomatic person tests positive after a PCR test, they should be retested, because the positive test should not be trusted. All true and irrefutable. And the word irrefutable has meaning these days. It's a nonsensical claim that 100,000 people have died of or with coronavirus. It's nonsense. It might be half that. It might be less. And the government gets hammered about having the worst death toll in Europe. At Prime Minister's Questions today, Keir Starmer, Labour Party leader, said to Johnson, "Why have we been so bad compared to other countries? Other countries have done so much better than us." Well, it's obvious, because other countries took the World Health Organization directive on how to count deaths, and they took it seriously. That's why. I mean, the whole story collapses. We're not in a pandemic or anything near a pandemic. You factor in that in 30 years, NHS bed capacity is halved, you know, halved from around 300,000 in 1988 to 141,000 last year, right? While the population is growing. No illness is putting any pressure on the health service. It's been destroyed over the years. So it's nonsense. All of it. Not conjecture, but fact. Stone cold fact. Last September. That story was in the Telegraph last September. 1/3 of deaths may be wrongly attributed to coronavirus. At least. Who else mentioned it? Well, the BBC gave it a mention. Typically, Simon McCoy on BBC News 24. But no analysis. No analysis, just a mention. And that's to cover their arses. Do you know how that works, right? 3:20 on a Tuesday afternoon. Nobody's watching BBC News 24 BBC News 24 anyway. Nobody. 20 minutes into the programme, Simon McCoy comes out of a report on something else, and it sounds a bit like this. Laura Kunzberg there, BBC political editor. In other news, Oxford University has published analysis that claims as many as 1/3 of coronavirus deaths were wrongly attributed to the virus. and that those died of other conditions. Hugh's here with the sport. Hugh. Thanks, Simon. England have reached 201 for 5 in their second innings on day 4 of the second test at Edgbaston. Their lead now over the West Indies is 156. What? Hang on, Hugh. What did Simon just say about Oxford telling us that one third of deaths attributed to coronavirus might be bullshit? That's how it works. That's how it works. They cover their arses. It's the equivalent of putting an apology on page 17 in fine print. One day they say, this guy is a racist on page 1. And then they get sued and they settle out of court. And on page 17 in fine print, you can't even read it with a microscope. Well, we apologise, we were wrong. And of course, because of that, when Johnson said yesterday, oh, 100,000 people have died, it's terrible, people weren't scratching their heads watching at home thinking, but it couldn't be 100,000. Because they never heard of the Oxford University research that clearly shows the counting of deaths attributed to coronavirus is hardly scientific. The media is very clever, you know. On Judgment Day, when we're coming for them with the pitchforks and the torches, they'll say, oh, we did talk about it. Yeah, you did, at 3:20 on a Tuesday. And there was no analysis. None. Now, pathology professor John Lee, an esteemed professor of pathology, John Lee was on talk radio with Julia Hartley Brewer on the 6th of January, 3 weeks ago to the day, right? 21 days ago, John Lee, pathologist. And he was talking about death figures and government charts and graphs. And John made a stunning prediction. Let me remind you, 3 weeks ago to the day.
When you look at the graphs for what is happening right now in January, what happened in December, what's happening through the autumn, are we seeing the same sort of levels of excess mortality? Because what we're seeing in these graphs were very scary graphs, but, you know, we're told, you know, 1 in 50 of us have coronavirus, that it's, you know, this exponential growth, more and more people in hospital, we're heading into a second wave, the NHS is going to be overwhelmed, more and more people are going to die. When you, as a pathologist, a trained pathologist, look at the data on mortality figures at the moment, are we seeing excess mortality?
In a word, we're seeing mortality that's within the envelope, well within the envelope of what normally happens at this time of year. The last 5 years have been a below average number of death years, if you look at the ONS data anyway, compared to the last 27, which is how far their data go back. So the fact is, the deaths we see, you can present these graphs in lots of different ways. And of course, most people aren't very good at looking at graphs, but the envelope within which we're in, we're below the average point of the deaths at this time of year. The question is, what are those deaths attributable to? A lot of them are being attributed to COVID, incorrectly in my view, because of the flawed testing regime. The fact is, the number of deaths, so the total number of deaths from COVID, this figure that we have of 70,000, equates to about 1 in 6 deaths over the entire 9 months that we've been looking at this thing. If you accept that about half of those deaths are probably not actually due to COVID, they're due to something else because of the testing problems, actually it's within the envelope of a normal sort of respiratory infection. The fact is, the only sustainable exit for this is for the population to come into equilibrium with the virus. As if you put selective pressure on the virus, it will change into a more easily transmissible form, which we've seen. One thing to look out for in the next few weeks is that because the testing is so inaccurate, as we vaccinate more people, we'll get more, it's possible that we'll get more false positive tests. So it's quite possible that as the vaccination goes on, we'll actually see an increased spike in tests, which doubtless the government will become more hysterical about. The fact is, the whole hysteria should stop. The exit for this is that we protect the vulnerable and we let everybody else get back to their normal lives. There is no exit strategy other than coming into equilibrium with this virus. It's out there. We will have to live with it. And by the way, it's not killing everybody. It's actually doing what viruses do, which is killing the vulnerable and the weak and the infirm and the very elderly. That's what they do, I'm afraid. That's a fact of life.
It's a fact of life. Nostradamus over here, John Lee, the pathologist, the professor. They'll become increasingly hysterical over deaths in the coming weeks, he said. And he said that 3 weeks ago to the day, January 6th. The clip, I believe, is still on Talk Radio's Twitter thingamajiggamajig. Wow. Now, I spent a good deal of time on BBC Radio 5 Live this morning. Ordinarily, I like to flip around and flit about on different radio stations. Most of the time I listen to all of them, but there was so much going on with Radio 5 Live today. It's the BBC flagship radio station. They had some really interesting guests on. There were some really interesting comments from the presenters and their guests, comments on masks, on the 100,000 death claim, and much more. So we're going to dip in and out of what the country's radio listeners are hearing, because what Radio 5 Live was telling us today, well, that was being echoed on BBC Radio 4 and also on BBC Breakfast Television, have no doubt about it. Now, Naomi Forrester Soto is a virologist at Keele University. They use her a lot. Naomi Forrester Soto. Why do you always say the name a second time, Richie? It's an old radio trick. Quiet you. It's an old radio trick. I do it because it gives you a chance to make a note. Because I know that you sometimes like to go looking for these people. So I'll say it a third time. Naomi Forrester Soto is a virologist at Keele University. As I said, on BBC Radio 5, live quite a bit. Nicky Campbell wanted to nail her down, I'm sure he did, to an opinion on when life would be returning to normal. Here's the segment.
Okay, be honest with us. As a virologist, as somebody who has and is studying this really closely, given the fact that we have better treatments now, and better treatments coming down the line as well, we have the vaccines, but on the other side we have new variants. When do you think we can return to some kind of normal, and will return to some kind of normal?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and you know,
be absolutely straight with us. What is your feeling? Because sometimes people, I'm not accusing you of it, but sometimes people soft soap it a little bit because they don't want to kind of, you know, bring people down too much. I mean, there are positive signs, but you know, what would you say if we were chatting in private now? What would you say?
I honestly, the earliest I think is September, and that's still a pretty optimistic hope, because especially with the news that manufacturing of the vaccines is, you know, having some issues, or that's been in the news the last couple of days. I think that, you know, and there are a couple of vaccine candidates that have just been withdrawn because they didn't show promising enough immunity. So, you know, from a vaccine point of view, we would hope to get most people, I think, vaccinated by September. But whether or not that's going to allow us back to return to normality, I think only time will tell.
Until we're all vaccinated. But even then, it might not mean we get back to normal. September, until we're all vaccinated. I'd rather drink the piss of a 65-year-old, 27-stone female prostitute than have the vaccine. Because the piss of a 65-year-old, 27-stone brasser would do me far less harm than the experimental mRNA vaccine. September, she said. Jesus, Nicky. Take her apart, man. Did he take her apart, Nicky?
Thank you. I'm Professor Callum Semple. We've spoken to Callum many times on this programme. He told the BBC the UK should be braced for another 50,000 deaths from coronavirus. Naomi, thank you very much indeed, as ever. I can hear the family in the background, which is music to our ears. Naomi Forrester Soto, virologist from Keele University at 6:40.
And as we
won.
It's 6:41. No, not only did he challenge her on her claim that things wouldn't be back to normal until September, by which time most of us will have topped ourselves and just given up. No, he said, and Callum Semple says that we should brace ourselves for possibly having 50,000 more deaths. Nicky was in top form, Nicky Campbell, today. He's getting irate. The former Wheel of Fortune host. Getting irate, he's getting irate. And he's going to explode one day in a park because some joggers, well, they're getting on his tits.
I still feel a little bit... You know, you see four people gathered together in the park. I feel a bit angry.
Gathered? How gathered?
I gathered just chatting, or, you know, four joggers together just chit-chatting.
Close.
I'm getting a little bit, you know, pernickety about it. I've not said anything yet, but I'm on the verge.
He's on the verge. I go out running quite a bit. Please come and say something to me, Nicky. Please. Won't end well. What a dipstick. His mate, Rachel Burden, does rein him in somewhat.
Do you know what? Pressure cookers in individual homes and houses at the moment are reaching a bit of a peak, aren't they? And you can understand why people just need to go out and seek the company at a safe distance of others just to see a different face. So
yeah,
I get
erase
that
what
too.
I just said.
Yeah. No. It's both are valid. Both views are valid.
I'm not properly focused yet, maybe, but it's just a thought I had, you know.
There's no erasing what you said, you joyless bastard. I bet you Campbell is the type to go outside and shout at children for playing football. Bet you he's never had a day of fun in his whole life. Sanctimonious shy-talk. Nicky Campbell. More from Campbell and his partner in crime, Rachel Burden, on BBC Radio 5, coming up shortly on this programme, which we're doing a little bit differently today. It is a recorded version of the Richie Allen Radio Show. I'm in Salford today, and I'm having a good time talking to myself. Jeff Lynne's ELO. She cried. Electric Light Orchestra and a showdown on the Richie Allen Radio Show. I heard that song for the very first time in the film Kingpin. Bill Murray, Woody Harrelson and Vanessa Angel. Not to mention Randy Quaid. I've got a good memory. Me. Let's move swiftly on. Onwards. Briefly, children screwed. I don't know if you saw this today. The Prime Minister announced, the Education Secretary also, Gavin Williamson, announcing that children would not be returning to schools before the 8th of March. Yeah, I'll leave that one right there. And we've spent a bit of time, you and me, talking about quarantine in recent days. Speculation as to what would the new rules around quarantine be. We were told that because the virus is so deadly, because of these new variants from South Africa, from Southern America and Portugal, these variants, that we need to close our borders. So they've made a decision for now. British residents arriving in England from hot zones or COVID hotspots will have to quarantine in hotels, according to the Home Secretary, Priti Patel. These measures will apply to people coming from most of South America, from Southern Africa and Portugal because of the terror about the new variants. Most overseas visitors from those countries are already barred from entering the UK. But if you now take a holiday in one of those places, you will have to quarantine in a hotel at your own expense when you arrive home. Labour, the worst opposition party in the history of politics, and that's globally. Oh, what a shit show Labour is. Labour said that hotel quarantine should be mandatory for all arrivals. Doesn't matter where you go. Doesn't matter. You could go to Dublin. Temple Bar, get pissed up. Well, not these days. Amsterdam, get pissed up. Shag a prostitute, not these days. Anyway, you could go to Amsterdam. When you come back, you'd have to isolate for up to 10 days and security would monitor you. So Labour wanted that for every country. Bastards. Go on holiday, you'll have to quarantine when you come back. That's what they wanted. Yvette Cooper, Labour, she looks like a pumpkin on a toothpick. You know what I'm talking about. She wanted to know why. Why didn't you ban all? Why didn't you quarantine every country? Why not? Priti Patel, the Home Secretary, responded to that question. Here she is.
I think, first of all, it's important, and I come back to this point, that all the measures, every measure that has been introduced across government has provided degrees of protection, various layers and levels of protection against transmission of the virus. The Right Honourable Lady has heard me say already that travel is down from 90% compared to this time last year. Clearly, there are travel bans in place for countries that are red listed, and that'll continue. And the announcement today will also reduce the number of travelling passengers. I do want to emphasise that, because people should simply not be travelling. And we see the examples, Madam Deputy Speaker. I will call some of them out. I mean, Border Force have given me examples where even at St Pancras, people have been turning up with their skis. That is clearly not acceptable. We see plenty of influencers on social media showing off about which parts of the world that they are in, mainly in sunny parts of the world. Going on holiday is not an exemption, and it's important that people stay at home.
How dare they? How dare those skiers go through St Pancras? This is some shit show, isn't it? And you know, today is Holocaust Memorial Day, and if you've been listening to UK news today, you will have heard one or two stories. You would have heard from the descendants, the family of Jewish people who were murdered in Auschwitz or Sobibor or Treblinka or Dachau. And I'm wondering, do some of the older Jewish residents of the UK, are some of them looking on with absolute horror at what's going on in the UK right now? Police stopping people at train stations, asking to see their papers. Where are you from? Where are you going? And I don't mean to be flippant in saying that. I'm not in any way yet comparing what happened to Jews in ghettos in Germany, in Poland. I'm not comparing that with what's going on now. What I'm saying is, our older Jewish folks who maybe had a parent maybe in one of these hellholes in Germany, are they looking on now going, this is how it fucking starts? I bet you more than one of them are. Priti Patel, huh? Priti Patel. Priti Patel, who, when she was the International Trade Secretary, I love any opportunity to bring this up. Priti fecked off to Israel on her holidays to meet with a foreign government. Could be any government, it doesn't matter. Without telling her boss, Theresa May at the time, without saying a word. And amazingly, she's still in a job of sorts. Wow. But listen, Keir Starmer and Yvette Cooper will get their way. They want to destroy your lives, my life, any bit of pleasure we might have. They will press and press and press, and eventually it will be announced, you can't go on... Yes, you can go on holiday, if you like. By all means, go to Santa Ponsa, go to Torremolinos, go to Malaga, by all means. But you'll have to pay up to £1,500 when you return, so you will, because you'll have to stay in a hotel to make sure that you haven't brought back the COVID.
Renowned healer Mark Byerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Byerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbyerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
It's 29 minutes to 6 o'clock, so it is.
Thanks to you, The Richie Allen Show is the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. Show your support for this unique broadcaster by making a regular financial contribution. Just the price of a cup of coffee each month will make a massive difference. Visit richieallen.co.uk for details.
And I have no idea why I told you the time. Because this isn't live. It's just force of habit. I can't help it. It's a tic that I have. I've got Tourette's, except I don't swear and call people the C word. I just keep telling people to tie. I walk around randomly. When you're a radio presenter and you've got Tourette's like I have, you go walking, you're going down Liverpool Street and you'll shout at random strangers. It's at 25 to 5 on the Richie. Sorry about that. I forgot where I was for a minute. Nicky Campbell. Bruce Springsteen, The River. Bruce Springsteen, The River, two hearts are better than one. Two hearts, two masks. How about wearing two masks instead of one? It makes sense, right? Over to Nicky Campbell, back to Radio 5 Live.
It's 7:26. What about double masking?
Do you want to...
I'd love to punch him in the face. What about double masking? Come here, Campbell.
I want a text on this. Paul says, double masks. I wear a single snood over a double snood. Both are washed daily. It keeps my nose warm as well. And he reckons a warm nose is more likely to repel infection by viruses. But I can't verify that. Perhaps your next guest can.
It's courtesy, isn't it? It's not rude to wear a snood. That's what I say. So could wearing two face masks at once during the pandemic provide more protection than just wearing one? It's a good question.
It's a what now? It's a what now? It's a what now? What kind of- motherfuckery are you? It's a good question. It's not a good question, you soiled haggis. Soiled haggis. You're no better than a haggis that somebody's had a piss on. You goon. You boot-licking, arse-kissing gimp of a BBC presenter. Why even bring up the notion of wearing two masks? Well, it's down to Tony Fauci, apparently. The guy who advises the Americans.
According to the White House advisor, Anthony Fauci, Tony Fauci to us, it likely does. Dr. Ben Killingly is an infectious diseases physician, also member of the new and emerging respiratory virus threats advisory group, NERVTAG, but is speaking in a personal capacity. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben Killingly.
Morning, Kate.
Morning, Ben. Ben, NERVTAG, new and emerging viruses, right? Government advisor, but speaking in a personal capacity. That's interesting. We'll talk about that in a few moments. Well, Ben, are two masks better than one?
It's not difficult to imagine that wearing two masks might stop more respiratory secretions. But I don't think the reason that we haven't controlled the spread of the virus at the moment is because we've only been wearing one mask up to now. You know, if you think that one mask could reduce the respiratory secretions that come out by about 80%, if you wear another mask on top of that, then you're then looking at reducing it by 80% of the 20% that was left. So you're getting about perhaps a 16% added effect. And it's whether that 16% is what it really means in transmission capability. So does reducing that respiratory secretion rate by that little bit more have a big effect on reducing transmissions? And of course, when you're, I tried wearing two masks last night, and it certainly feels a bit tighter. It feels a bit warmer in there. So the possible downsides, it becomes a bit more difficult to wear and a bit more difficult to tolerate wearing for a prolonged time. So it's just trying to get that balance. But I don't think I've seen evidence that wearing two masks is definitely the way forward.
Two masks. Wow. Wow. Now, I want you to brace yourself now. I want you to sit down and make sure that you've got a good grip on the armrests of your chair, because Nikki Campbell is going to shock and amaze you.
Looking back over the far too many months of this, it's interesting, isn't it? And it's worth reflecting on how our, you know, the scientific knowledge has to and fro'd quite a lot, specifically on masks. Back in March, Chris Whitty, the chief medical officer for England, said that the public wearing face masks will do little to combat the ongoing coronavirus outbreak. He said wearing a face mask had almost no effect on reducing the risk of contracting the illness, maybe providing safety for others. But the science has changed, and it changed pretty quickly, didn't it?
Well. Because you're stunned, right? It bears hearing again.
Looking back.
This is the sound of somebody very nearly doing their job.
Over the far too many months of this. It's interesting, isn't it? And it's worth reflecting on how our, you know, the scientific knowledge has to and fro'd quite a lot, specifically on masks. Back in March, Chris Whitty, the chief medical officer for England, said that the public wearing face masks will do little to combat the ongoing coronavirus outbreak. He said wearing a face mask had almost no effect on reducing the risk of contracting the illness, maybe providing safety for others. But the science has changed, and it changed pretty quickly, didn't it?
I'm sexually aroused. Yeah, let's not get too excited. It's one instance in 180 minutes of broadcasting. Right. It's 30 seconds out of a three-hour show. Very good. As I've pointed out many times on this programme, and as many of my peers have pointed out on their programmes, at the outset of this nonsense, at the outset, the government advisors around, well, particularly the Western world, the ones in the UK, Chris Whitty, Valance, as mentioned there by Campbell, Tony Fauci, all of them said, wearing a face mask is pretty useless. We wouldn't advise it. It doesn't prevent you transmitting the virus to somebody else, and it doesn't really protect you either. And then it changed all of a sudden. All of a sudden it changed. So what does Nerf Tag's Ben Killingly say then? Good question by Nikki Campbell, wasn't it? Let's give the soiled haggis credit where credit is due. The answer from Killingly.
I think the policy changed pretty quickly.
Very important. First, the very important opening salvo there. The policy changed pretty quickly. So the science didn't then.
You know, the science that was available told us that wearing masks wasn't likely to be particularly helpful.
The science told us that wearing masks wasn't likely to be particularly helpful. I know this is very childish. It might appear to be childish what I'm doing, but it's important, right? The policy changed.
And the new science that came out were some studies that looked at how masks can actually stop respiratory secretions coming out. So it was those sort of mechanistic studies that told us, well, perhaps face masks are doing more than the studies have shown us in the past.
Yeah, this is very important. He said new studies came out that talked about respiratory excretions, that talked about how the mask might prevent you from this aerosol thing, you know, where you speak and you project aerosol. Problem, of course, is those weren't real studies. And Ben Killingly said so at the time, back in May of last year. We'll come back to that in a minute. And these are the studies that a certain Edwina Curry was alluding to on last night's Richie Allen radio show, but they're not studies. They are anecdotal pieces, opinions by people, that all of a sudden were declared to be scientific evidence. And overnight, the policy changed to everybody in the country should wear a mask. You see? It's horse shit.
And they're a relatively easy thing to do. We're a bit more relaxed about the public wearing them and feeling either contaminating themselves or getting the impression that they let their guard down by wearing a mask.
Were so you I an think early in adopter?
In desperate times, we were looking for desperate measures, but I think...
In desperate times, we were looking for desperate measures. So we decided that, wearing a mask is not too much to ask of people, even though the science tells us that it doesn't help at all. And when Witte and Vallon said the science is that masks are no good and Fauci said it, all of a sudden these new studies appeared to say, oh, it stops the respiratory secretions. But there was these were not under clinical trial conditions. Those things take months to do. It was just bullshit. And at the time, Killingly said so, and we'll come back to that in a minute.
But I think you'll agree that, you know, we've been pretty good at wearing masks now for some time. Yeah. And the virus hasn't gone away. And other countries that are good at...
We've been good at wearing the masks for quite a time and the virus hasn't gone away. Killingly wants so very badly to declare on the BBC radio, breakfast radios this morning. He's desperately keen to say masks are fucking useless, but he's holding back.
Wearing masks. I think there are other things that we've done. Test and tracing and tracking people have had more effect in those countries.
He's being very cautious. But last May, Dr. Ben Killingly was asked with other epidemiologists and virologists like him, they were asked to review this brand spanking new evidence that dropped out of thin air about the respiratory secretions. And do you know what Dr. Ben Killingly said back in May last year? I'm going to read it for you. He said, regarding the analysis of the evidence base, the new report, is overly optimistic about the value of face coverings. And it is incorrect to conclude that the evidence shows that face coverings can reduce viral transmission in the community. There is, in fact, no good evidence that face coverings achieve this. And many of his colleagues that were also asked to review the new miracle evidence that suggested face masks do have some value, many of his colleagues pointed to the fact that there was no scientific merit to the new stuff. It was anecdotal. It was horse shit, bullshit. Undiluted bullshit. It wasn't so much a Whopper as a double Whopper with cheese, onion rings, loads of salad, large fries and an extra large Coca-Cola. That's how much of a lie it was. And yet the sheep, the fucking sheep of this country, couldn't wait to get their masks on. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show. It's time for another tune. It's Wednesday's programme, the 27th of January 2021, recorded today. Sorry about that. These things happen.
Thank you. No,
thank you. Hold your applause, thanks.
Thank you.
I'm not that good. Music. Yes, music from the Toy Dolls, Nelly the Elephant, on the Richie Allen Radio Show. It is Wednesday's programme. It is nice to be with you, not speaking to you live today, but anyway, it's all right, isn't it? That isn't too bad. As I am recording it, though, as I'm doing it right now, the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson is flanked by Jonathan Van Tam and Patrick Vallance, two insufferable gobshines. Van Tam is a deputy chief medical officer, and Vallance is, of course, the chief scientific advisor to the UK government. What are they saying today? Well, Johnson, according to the BBC, has said that the government will set out a roadmap for reopening schools, the economy and society on February 22nd. So in other words, another month of this fucking misery, of this miserable fucking existence. While businesses go down the toilet, more bad news for businesses today. I got up out of bed this morning, whipped on the TV just after 6 o'clock. I get up at 5:30, busied myself in the studio, got ready, went downstairs, turned on Sky and the BBC. Stephen Dixon on Sky said, news that another million jobs could be at risk in the coming weeks and months. That's lovely. Johnson has just said today, carry on until February 22nd, basically a month, or give or take a few days from now. And at that stage, we'll tell you what we plan to do. Jesus, Mary and Joseph. Eh? He's also been talking about the quarantine plans. Travellers to the UK from 22 countries in total will go into hotel quarantine, meaning if you are a UK resident, there are now 22 countries where it's best not to visit, because if you do, you will have to pay for your own hotel quarantine when you return. Madness. Anyway, let's move on. Let's leave that alone. Because I noticed something else today on BBC Radio 5. I told you earlier on this programme would be BBC Radio 5 top heavy. Last summer, I remember this well, because we spoke about it on this very programme. Last summer, BBC Radio 5 Live Breakfast spoke about Tom. It covered Tom's story. Tom was a 32-year-old man, otherwise very healthy man, who died of coronavirus. He'd had the virus for a week and was recovering from it. In fact, the day before he died, Tom took to the garden to sit down in the garden with his girlfriend, his partner, and he reported to her and to his parents that the symptoms had eased and that he was feeling a good deal better. The following day, sadly, and I mean sadly, not that I knew the man or know anything about him, sad to hear that, he took a bad turn and he passed away. Now, I remember this because at the time, the BBC spoke to his family. They spoke to his brother, Carl, and his dad is also called Carl, and mum, Sylvia. The point of the BBC speaking to them last summer was to push mask wearing. I would argue, it might sound a bit unfair, that the family was exploited by the BBC. I covered it last year. And now that the country has announced that more than 100,000 people have died, that we've passed this milestone, which I've said earlier and I believe to be nonsense, right? Absolute garbage. Now that this 100,000 figure is out there, the BBC has revisited Tom's story, dragged it up again, and have been featuring the interview with the family. And listening to it this morning, on January 27th. Listening back, it poses some disturbing questions that the Radio 5 presenters either missed because they are galactically stupid or they deliberately ignored. First of all, this is a bit sad. This is Tom's mother, Sylvia, talking about how he had COVID, but he was on the mend and then died very suddenly. Tom's mum, Sylvia.
Tom had been suffering with the COVID symptoms for about 6 or 7 days by then. We'd spoke to him the day before. He said he thought he was on the mend. He was doing much better. And then the phone call just came out the blue. Carl was at Birmingham working, so he came straight home and we went over to the house, but there was nothing to be done. We couldn't even go in and see him. We was just stood in the street crying. It felt really surreal. It felt like a knife through the heart. The shock of it, that a young, healthy man could be dead from this virus, when he was saying just a day earlier that he was feeling a bit better. I think we was both in a daze, and it took ever so long for them to sort Tom out, to get him out of the house, to take him, the coroner's van came and they took him to the mortuary, and Carl and I just followed at the back of the car and sat on the car park outside, not knowing what to do.
They weren't allowed in to the house that he shared with his girlfriend. That's very disturbing. A 32-year-old man in pretty perfect health, right? Has had the virus, he's been told he has it, has a bad few days, gets over it, on the mend, feeling chirpier, in the garden, and the day before, it's looking good. The following day, the family gets told that he's passed away. Right. Listen to what she says next. She describes how they were treated. That's shocking and brings up a lot of questions that, again, the BBC doesn't or didn't at the time seem interested in or just it went over their heads. Listen.
It was just the absolute worst time of our lives, and I just wanted to go and be with him, and you couldn't even do that because he was in a mortuary. We couldn't even go and see him. He'd died and we'd never seen him. I'd never held his hand or told him how much I loved him or anything like that, because you weren't able. He was very much, he was infected, obviously, and he was very much treated like he was infected. And I get that you've got to be safe for the staff and the police and all the rest of it. But I felt at the time I would have wanted to hug or touch him anyway, regardless of it. It was just horrendous. When they was bringing him out of the house, he was in a body bag, and that was the last time we'd seen him. And I said to one of the police, I just want to touch him and hold him. And she said, you really don't want to see him, she'd said. So you imagine the very worst thing that it could look like. But in the end, she said, close your eyes and come to the ambulance, which I did. And I quite literally just held on to his feet through the body bag and told him what a wonderful son he was. And we hoped that wherever he'd gone, that it was going to be okay. We'd be okay, not to worry about us, that we would cope, we'd be okay.
How could Tom be okay one day and dead the next, and the mum be prevented from seeing her son, from identifying him? Now, I know the girlfriend or the partner would have identified Tom. I'm well aware of that. But how could the parents be denied a couple of minutes with their son? How could that be denied them? This is not the Ebola virus, right? And the police officer intimated to Sylvia that Tom wasn't in the sort of condition that it would be good for her to see him. I don't understand that. I really don't. Now, I know when you're, to roll back a bit on my criticism of the BBC presenters, I know that when you're speaking to people like Sylvia, a sensitivity is demanded in that situation. You're speaking to somebody whose emotions are incredibly raw, as they would be if it happened to you or me or anybody else. I'm well aware of that. But that's an extraordinary thing. The only touch she could have with him was to touch his leg through a body bag. They weren't allowed to see him. And the police officer saying, look, you really don't want to see him. Well, why not? What happened to his body? What happened to his immune system from one day to the next that they couldn't see him? If ever there was reason to call for an inquest, surely the death of Tom is an inquest that it stands to reason should have been called. Why didn't the coroner ask for an inquest? I don't understand it. I really don't. And I reckon there are a lot of things going on and have been going on since last year, stories like this that people don't hear about. Things going on that you wouldn't spray paint on an underpass, to use a very old cliche. But who's asking the questions outside the independent media? The mainstream media doesn't want to know. Could coronavirus, could a respiratory infection turn a guy from one day to the next into a body bag? I don't know. This is Wednesday's Richie Allen radio show. It's the 27th of January. It is, of course, 2021. I keep saying this because this is the first year in my broadcasting career that in the new year, I haven't made the mistake of referring to it as the previous year. I must be coming on. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm Benjamin Button. I'm, it's not Alzheimer's I'm getting. Maybe I'm getting younger. I'm going to take a tune. Now, when we come back from the tune, I've got a very interesting guest. I've a really, really good friend called Martin Noakes. Gentleman, great, great musician, singer-songwriter, was so nice and kind to me during my stint in London on TV back in 2013, early 2014. You couldn't meet a nicer, more kind-hearted bloke than Martin. And he's a big supporter of the independent media. And today Martin said, Richie, I've got a friend called Nick Smith. And Nick is well known for being an activist and for being a really good guy who takes out soup to give to people who need it, to people down on their luck in parks in London. And he was arrested for doing so by the Metropolitan Police yesterday, Tuesday. Maybe you want to talk to him. And I said, of course you want to talk to him. So when I come back from this, I'll be joined by Nick. I've got David Bowie lined up. This is Starman on the Richie Allen radio show in Salford. RichieAllen.co.uk. Do check out my website, by the way. David Bowie and Starman on the Richie Allen radio show Wednesday evening. Recorded program today. And just before the track there, I told you that Martin Noakes, a really good friend of mine, put me in touch with my guest today. Nick has been handing out soup to people in a park in Forest Row for some time now. And my understanding is that has been greatly appreciated by people in that neighbourhood who might be on difficult times because of everything that's been going on. And yesterday afternoon, Nick was arrested in that park, and there's a video of that arrest on BitChute. I will put it on the Facebook and Twitter accounts of this programme after the programme, so you'll be able to watch it. It's on BitChute anyway, under Marnin's channel, Martin Noakes' channel. And I'm glad that Nick has agreed to come on the programme. Let's welcome him. Nick, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing fine, man. Doing fine. Good to hear you.
That's good to hear you, mate. Thanks for taking the time out to chat with us this afternoon. Nick, what happened? This happened yesterday, did it? Tell us what happened.
They phoned me in the morning. Police phoned in the morning and invited me to come to the skate park to have a chat. And so I did. And I popped down there. And when I got there, it was like very, very quickly, it went from like, hello, what we've come to do is issue you a summons for £200, and if you pay it within X, it will go down to Y, and this, that, and the other. And it just sort of went from, it just escalated really, really quickly. But I didn't want to give them my name. I just said, I don't want to assist you in this. I'm not being belligerent, but I don't want to assist you in this. This is farcical. I give away soup for free. What is the issue?
What the hell is wrong with that? Now, tell me this, Nick. How did they get your phone number to ring you? That sounds very unusual.
No, it's nothing weird with that. Like, I have a relationship with the local police. The local police come down regularly.
Right,
the local police come and have soup. I've even had a hug from one of the local police officers. It was a little bit weird because he's got all these things attached to him. But you know, it was quite warm. And he's a really good guy. He's even put us through to Wealdon Council for there's a bit of a fund within the police for ventures and initiatives such as the little one that I started. But these were something else. These guys were like RoboCops. They came on a mission, and I don't know. It just seemed like a sort of an old empire tactic. Go in, find the leader, take them out, and send a little bit of a shockwave through the community.
It's a nasty thing. It's a pretty dreadful thing to see, really. It never ceases to spook me when I see, you know, a genial, amiable guy like yourself being taken away in handcuffs for seemingly nothing. And you've been handing out soup to people. First of all, what a lovely thing to do, Nick. When did you begin doing that, and what prompted that? What motivated it?
I lost all my friends when, you know, during the last sort of however 8-9 months, that most of the people that I thought I knew, I've kind of realized I don't really know. They think I'm a right-wing sort of fascist lunatic, or I don't really know what they think I am, but I can't speak into that space anymore.
Yeah.
And now they're all begging to be locked away and jacked up on aborted fetal cells. So basically I ended up in this position where I realized that there's nothing I can do. I can't talk to those wearing masks and say, what do you think you're doing? And conversely, the other way around. I can't talk to the people not wearing masks and say, you need to be kind to these people because they're really frightened.
They are. They've
got these companies that are paying so much money to keep the spin tight, just to keep the nuances on the little funny little stay alert, stay awake, stay distant in between your pop songs that they ply us with. But I've been on like a cancer healing journey the last few years. And one of the things that I didn't want any of the sort of, Smith, Klein, Wellcome, Beecham, Roach, Rumble stuff. I just wanted to go natural. So lots of juice, lots of coffee enemas, loads and loads and loads of bone broth. And what I discovered with the bone broth is that it gives you a unique protein profile, which actually regenerates and restructures the water in your very cells, which is akin to having a clear pineal gland. You function properly, you work, you connect with yourself easier. And apart from that, it heals your gut too. And I think that, you know, whatever the problem is, you know, more connection is not a bad thing, whether it's to your, you know, to your cells, to your water memories, because, you know, water is memory. And we are 99% water, and most of that water is dead water. That's completely unstructured, and then we wonder why we don't function.
So can I ask, Nick, can I ask, we've got plenty of time, we've as much time as you need, so I won't be, anything you want to say, we'll get to it. So the soup then, and handing it out, was your own experience with the bone broth, was that what you were doing in the park? Giving people...
I've been doing it for 3 years.
For yourself,
I was reading this book by a dude called Dr. Cohen. He was one of the first people to come out and speak about the virus. And he spoke about Steiner's take. The area where I live is very Waldorf-y, as I'm sure you know, if you know Martin. Steiner's take on the Spanish flu was, there's no such thing as a virus. This is toxins excreting from people's cells due to the, you know, the electronic overload from the massive increase in, you know, electronic equipment, etc., during the First World War. And, you know, we're going through our own little mini maxi electronic revolution as we upgrade from certain G's to certain G's. And he seemed to think that was it. And obviously he now struck off and he can't practice as a doctor. But he's still, you know, he's a wonderful man. And I was just looking at that and I thought, that's something I can do. I can go and I can... And I didn't know what to do. I was really, really, really wanted to do something. But whatever I posted or whatever I tried to contribute to seems to create more antagonism and more kind of, you know, more acrimony. It wasn't working. But I thought, right, I'm going to bypass all this mind stuff and head stuff. I'm just going to go straight to people's gut biomes.
Wow.
And you know, with the bone broth. But then people wanted a vegetarian option. And then some people started to come along and make cakes. And then people bought teas and coffees. And then people bought liposomal vitamin C. And it just became a thing.
Marvelous.
It just became, you know, we were doing Eurythmy out there on the court. And And you know, in Forest Row, it's a very wet little hamlet. And for it's been running for just done week 17. So I figure it out that I don't know how many months that is. Three, four months.
Here's the question, Nick. I want to hear more about what you've been doing. But before you tell me more about what you've been doing, let's go back to the arrest yesterday. So the £200 fine, so presumably they're saying you're breaching coronavirus guidelines. Or was there anything mentioned about, you know, your motivation in terms of giving out the broth? That's what I'm fascinated about.
No, none of that.
None of that. Just coronavirus.
Basically, what happened, they sent a couple of the costume wearers down on the Monday. We haven't seen any police for a while. As I say, we had a really good relationship with the local, they were the PCSOs. And they were the ones that put us forward to the parish council, and they were the ones who put us forward to Wealden for this financial award from the police.
Yeah.
They even came down at the end of one session to apologise for a rather antsy young PCSO, the costume-wearing people. They're all wearing costumes, but the ones that aren't actually police, one came down and got very sort of aggressive, and they came down to apologise. They said, "Oh, we're really sorry about Mario, he's new." That was really, really sweet.
Yeah.
But then we haven't seen the police for a few weeks. And then we had some two ladies come down yesterday. And they seemed to think that I should be controlling the people down there. And they were saying to me, "Well, why aren't you making these people socially distanced? Why aren't you making people wear masks?" And I said, "Like, I can do that? It's not my job. I just come down here and dish up soup. That's all. It's very, very simple. I dish up soup, and I keep it really simple. Other people have come up with some amazing ideas about what we should do. I know I'm going off your topic, but what we should do with it. But I said to them that I call it the love soup thing because I know that every Monday I can bundle it all in my car, bring it all down, bring the fire bowl if I've got logs, and I can set up and I can do it. And if nobody helps at all, I'm absolutely fine with that, and I can still deliver love soup. If I start making it bigger and I need to go and get carts from lockups and this from there, and nobody helps, then it won't be love soup anymore. It'll be pissed off and grumpy soup, and that will completely sort of defeat the object.
So I'm fascinated. To my own. I tell you what, Nick, I'm fascinated that you got some financial, you know, support by the police at one time who thought this is a lovely initiative. I mean, this is really, really interesting stuff. Can I just take you back to something else you said a moment ago? You talked about losing friends. That rings a bell for me, and it rings a bell. It's come up on this program quite regularly and quite recently. And people are really, you know, they're struggling to come to terms with that they can't persuade their friends, not that they can't convince them, but that they can't persuade them to take a second look. You said yourself the conditioning and the programming is incredibly strong. We have to accept, don't we? We have to, I suppose, still love the people around us who wear the masks and who go along with it, because it's not their fault, Nick, really, is it?
I'm with that. I'm 100% with that. My issue wasn't really that. It was with kind of like my best friend. He's not. I had two best friends. I've still got one. One's a homeopath, and he's obviously well on board and cool. The other one was an ex-advertising executive that I used to speak to every week, and I have done for years. And I just had to say, I can't speak to this, I can't speak into this space anymore. And he said, "Well, why? We're really good friends." And I said, "I know, but you know, you speak your bit and I speak my bit, and then we try not to judge each other. And then you start mentioning, but if we face the facts,
right?
But if we look at the science," and I'm just like, "You don't have the science. Just because your science comes out of a bigger screen than mine, after you've watched Chelsea play to an empty stadium, it doesn't make it any more factual than anything that I pick up anywhere that I go to source things. But you can't help chucking that in, and until you can accept that we've got different views, I can't speak into this space. It insults my soul.
And it's demoralizing. I know, I've been there. Everybody's been there. Let me remind our listeners, Nick Smith is our guest, and what a fascinating story Nick has told. I'll ask you in a moment about your own health, Nick, if you don't mind. Nick was arrested yesterday in Forest Row. He was summoned to the park by the police and they arrested him under these fictitious coronavirus guidelines, and someone issued him a £200 fine, which of course Nick won't be paying. Nick has been, for several years now, of his own initiative, he's been handing, I love this idea, handing out bone broth.
I've been getting into the bone broth myself. Of late. The last 17 weeks.
17 weeks.
Is all. I've been doing the soup kitchen every Monday for 17 weeks.
It's brilliant.
It was my attempt to make a contribution because, like I said, it could go beyond the mind.
Well, it was organic, wasn't it?
Straight to the gut.
Straight to the gut. I mean, and then it grew, as you were saying, prior to the bone broth, when you had the soup kitchen, you were talking about people coming along and doing other things. And ultimately, they said to you, sorry, mate, ultimately, they said to you, oh, well, these people are not socially distancing. So they blamed you as the alleged organizer of this event. But I think it's terrific.
They didn't put me down as an organizer.
Did they not?
They just came. I think they didn't want to do that. I mean, that might be the next stage. I don't know. But I gather that fine is a lot bigger.
Yeah, a lot bigger.
And I gather that can be sort of slapped on you in the same way that this did. You know, after the event, I don't really know. But I'm not a legal person. But I was told that the rule or whatever, the offence was that I gathered in a group of more than one. And this was on the body cam of the lass in the costume that came on the previous day.
Wow. And hearing so many stories like this from other people. I'm not calling you an activist, no, I'm not. But activists who are doing various things, not necessarily coronavirus protests or lockdown protests, but other things, getting into the same trouble. Tell us, Nick, about your own medical problem with cancer. How serious was or is the cancer?
I had a 3 years ago. I got diagnosed with stage 3 cancer. I had two different types. One really, really, really horrible, very, very bad prognosis. But I didn't actually know, which was really good. And then a load of really fortuitous stuff happens. You know the deal. I'm sure you do. I can hear it in your voice. Once you get started, as old Goethe said, you know, when we commit, Providence moves also, bringing forth all kinds of whatever good stuff that is hitherto unforeseen. And you know, I went raw vegan. There's never been a better time to be told you have cancer. I don't believe we get cancer. I think it's just a misalignment or a massive inflammation. But anyway, I dove into the truth about cancer. I haven't touched antibiotics or modern medicine for, unless I broke my arm or something, for 30 odd years anyway.
So there was no way. There was no way you were having the chemo. No way. No chance.
No, not a hope. Not a hope. And again, not out of any kind of belligerence. The same with the vaccination. It's not out of any belligerence or any sort of anarcho-conflated big pharma hate. It's just not a good idea. It's just really not a good idea.
Yeah, when it comes down to it, that's basically it. It's not a good idea. It makes no sense whatsoever,
That thing they want to shove up your nose. I had to... I'm still under the Marsden, although technically I'm in remission from the worst of the killer of the cancers.
Brilliant.
The other one is still limping on, although she writes things like he destroyed it with black salve or something like that. But she kind of likes me now. She didn't when I first used to go there.
You're a charmer. You're a charmer.
I try. Yeah. But she's pretty. She's from your land as well. I've got her smiling now when I go to see her. In fact, she was looking for some lump or other that was there on the previous. So I haven't seen her for a long time, obviously, because all that sort of cancer's been healed, hasn't it? Just like the flu,
everything,
and old age. Nobody died of that shit anymore.
It's just COVID now. It's just coronavirus. Thank God. Yeah. Praise be to God. We've only got one disease left in the world. Yeah.
Just the one we need to control. Anyway, I went to see the lovely Dr. Healan up at the Marsden, and she was just really baffled, and she sent her assistant off to go and get a second microscope with a bigger light, because she's like, but it's just not there. I don't understand. It's just not there. And I just smile at her sweetly, and away she goes. So they technically call me in remission because they didn't do it. and it kind of confuses them a little. But I just, you know, that all I did was just, I did a lot of stuff actually, but a lot of juice, a lot of bone broth, and a load of coffee enemas, which sounds yuck, but I tell you, if from somebody who's 3 years in and alive and very much alive, in more alive than ever in every way.
Nick, hang on. Sorry to interrupt you. It's amazing what you're saying and you being alive. Now, I've got to draw down on this. This is important because I interviewed a lady from Liverpool some years ago and she had similar success. So bone broth, you had loads of juices, you had the coffee enemas. Can I presume, yeah. Well, I'll ask you, I won't presume anything, I'll ask you. So did you get rid of sugar entirely? Was it moving towards a more alkaline-based and away from acidic, was it, as well?
Absolutely. No sugar, no carbs. It was just basically for the first 4 months, it was just what this dude, Chris Walk, his name is, he kind of leans a little bit heavy on the Christian. I'm big into the Christ energy, just not so much into the Christian game sort of thing.
Yeah.
He sort of leans a little bit that way, like a lot of Bible Belt Americans do, but he's got a really good protocol. And I started following his gut buster salads, these massive salads in a great big silver serving bowl, and like 4 or 5 juices a day. I did raw vegan for 4 months, and I got my diagnosis on January the 3rd. So it wasn't the easiest of times of the year to sort of pile in on that. But I hadn't worked for months, and I got a little contract to go to Bombay and build a little skate park over there. So I went, and I didn't get to build the skate park because I got typhoid. And I come home and spent 6 weeks in bed after being told in the East Surrey Hospital, East Surrey County, I think it's called, you're going to die and there'll be nothing we can do to save you. And I said, well, with respect, I understand you know about medicine, but yeah. I'm just trying to stay alive over here right now. And I don't really want 15 days intravenous antibiotics. Thank you. And it kicked me out of the hospital with that. So I was at home. But what I didn't realize, where divinity stepped in, or fate, whatever you call it, depending what you subscribe to, is that when you run a temperature above 40, cancer cells start to whiz ping out. It's like that. What's that cereal? Sugar Snap Pop, Snack Crackle Pop, or something?
Yeah. Rice Krispies. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. It's that cancer cells start going off like Rice Krispies in milk. Clip, 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 clip. So I was, you know, for 6 weeks, I was just burning up cancer cells with this typhoid. People pay a lot of money to go to these clinics in Germany and have, you know, fevers induced, long-term fevers induced to do exactly the same purpose.
I did not know that. That is.
I got mine in Bombay for free.
For free, you could fill books with the things I don't know. You could fill libraries with the things I don't know. That has fascinated me. That is that right? People pay enormous amounts of money to have controlled fevers induced so that they can burn cancer cells or get rid of them. That's amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's clinics in Germany. There's clinics in Mexico. Obviously, you're illegal in America, and I don't think there are any here.
Oh, they wouldn't be allowed here, owing to the which year was it, Nick? The Cancer Act here, where you're not allowed to speak about anything else. You can't claim that anything else helps with cancer. Only chemotherapy. What? It's not the 1936. It's the 39 Cancer Act. I can't remember. It's.
I have no idea. I'm aware of the declaration of Nixon's declaration of the war on cancer. And also aware of the fact that they've pumped something like $1 trillion into the war on cancer. And it's been every bit as successful as the war on drugs or any of the other wars.
Well,
waiting for the war on farmers' markets. Absolutely. Can we have a war on farmers' markets, please?
The trillions has meant that when Oxfam, and I'm no fan of Oxfam or its executives going to disaster zones and raping children. I'm no fan of Oxfam at all. But when they do their studies on wealth, they are valuable. When they told us the other day that since the coronavirus thing began, 9 guys have earned something like $1.5 trillion between them. So that's where all that money goes to fight cancer. It goes to the back pockets of these arseholes who put stories on their houses and buy chalets in Switzerland and all the rest of it. Can I ask you this in the time we have left? We're going to go to 6:30. I'm recording this today. I should be live. I mentioned this earlier on because of the our American streaming host is down, which doesn't happen. It happens very rarely. Let's get back. And thanks for talking so candidly about your own experience. That will be of huge interest to my audience who might have somebody who's recently been diagnosed with cancer. Of course, neither Nick nor me are saying you should stop doing this or don't listen to your oncologist. Nonsense. We're not saying that at all. But it's nice to know that there are things you can do alongside conventional treatments if you feel that you want to have the conventional treatment. Nick, with the situation
we're
in...
Can I just add one thing very quickly?
Of course you can. Go ahead.
A lot of people is that my oncologist was quite keen that I had some follow-up camera work, and the camera needed to go in a different kind of orifice.
Yeah.
Anyway, a couple of days beforehand, I had to turn up and had to have a COVID test in order to go get my procedure. And this woman came at me with this like Q-tip on steroids towards my nasal cavity.
Yeah.
And I just instinctively said, "What are you doing?" And she just said, "Well, this is your test." And I'm like, "No, you don't need to do that. If you want me, you just put it inside my mouth. You get wetness. That's all you need." And she said, "I'm going to have to put you down as refusing this test, and you probably won't get your procedure." I said, "Well, I'd prefer you not to put me down as refusing the test. Could you just say Mr. Smith looked at the 9-inch Q-tip and didn't think it was a good idea to have it rammed into his skull?" And I got my procedure. So, you know, why we need to have that thing rammed into the back of our head.
No, you don't.
Like you. You could feel tombs on the ship. I don't know. But why we need to have that thing rammed into the back of our head, I don't even know. I'm not even
speculating. Beyond us. Tell me this.
But you don't need to have it. If you're being told you're not going to get your procedure or you're not going to get your test without having this thing jabbed to the base of your brain or wherever it goes, that's not true.
Good man, Nick. Look, we've got about 4 minutes left, right? I'll invite you back on. I've got your details. I'd like to have you back on for a longer chat another time. And I mean that, by the way. Before we go, look, they're talking now about lockdown till September, and they're hell-bent on everybody taking the jab. You're obviously a doer, not a talker, and we need more of them. I'm not patronising you when I'm saying that. I include myself. I need to do more outside of the broadcasting. You're a doer, not a talker. Are we ever going to get out of this, Nick?
Yes, I think we are.
Why?
You know, in the same way that mankind's been trying to get nuclear weapons into space, you know, we essentially, just take it back to yourself. Like, this is where the hope comes from. Whenever I've had genius-like plans, really genius-like plans, plans where I'm so convinced I'm going to be a multimillionaire, everything's just going to be hunky-dory, it's always ended in absolute abject disaster. Whenever I get the hell out of my own way, life just becomes beautiful.
Yeah.
And as clever and as rich as these bozos and Zuckerbergs are, and all these characters doing the land and property and cash grab and trying to move to their own form of digital economy, etc., etc., however clever they think they are, divinity's going to step in at some point and be just like that dad with the angry 8-year-old swinging fists.
Yeah.
And just say, stop. You know, it's time for mankind to go back a little bit and think, why did we choose Confucius instead of Lao Tzu? Why did we choose Freud over Jung? You know, we get presented time and time and time again with beautiful choices. And then we choose the safer options because we've been infantilized. You know, we've been reduced, stripped of our spiritual sovereignty. Literally, our third eyes are calcified. Our cells are corrupt. We've got stayed dead water in our cells. We don't work as human beings. All we need to do is just to really start with some small acts of self-love on a personal basis. You know, the whole universe sings with joy when one soul awakens. We don't need to focus too much on the bigger issues. We can't. There's nothing we can do. Look, I tried to focus on a bigger issue. I get two 18-stone goons come down and drag me off in handcuffs. But I can look after me and I can shine. And that has an effect. It has a much bigger effect than I think we give it credit for. And I think we're far more powerful than we know. And it doesn't have to be demonstrative. You don't have to have a million likes on YouTube. You don't have to be sucking Simon Cowell's cock to get your fame, fortune and verification. You know, when you go inside, you verify yourself. And also, you know, like a diamond takes a lot of pressure, takes a lot of shit in order to become a diamond. I think, you know, we're all creators of our own experience. And whatever it is, we can't just sit there pointing the fingers at them over there. Somehow or other, we need this experience. If we didn't need it, it wouldn't be happening.
Nick, do me a favor. It's been a tonic, mate, talking to you. It really has. And I don't mince words. Thanks for coming on and sharing that with us. I love your approach to what happened yesterday, the positivity of it. And I've enjoyed listening to you speaking in the last 25, 26 minutes. Say hello to Martin Noakes for me, and I promise I'll be in touch real soon to schedule you coming on for a longer stint with a live audience where we get an enormous amount of feedback during the live show from people asking questions. So I'd love to have you back on. In the meantime, all the best. Godspeed to you, and do stay in touch, won't you?
God bless to you too.
Thanks, Nick. Have a wonderful evening, man. You too, mate. Bye for now. That was Nick Smith there on Wednesday's Richie Allen radio show. A lovely gentleman was arrested in Forest Row Park in London yesterday. He's been handing out soup to people. In recent weeks, it's been bone broth soup because of his own experiences with that. But before that, it was a traditional soup kitchen. He'd even been congratulated for doing that by his local police force, who had chipped in with a financial reward for that. But these are crazy times now. He was summoned to the park and he was arrested and taken away and fined £200 for breaching coronavirus guidelines. These are mad times. Look, I'm going to go and leave you. Hopefully back with the live show tomorrow. Live tomorrow is Thursday, where I have two brilliant guests for you. Bye now. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday.